Happy February, Derek. How are you doing today?
It's February. Still cold here in Wisconsin, but actually, you know what the upside of that is? You can wear a jean jacket and not sweat your ass off.
Well, that is if the sun is not shining through your giant picture window in February, which unfortunately is my life right now. So I'm going with the jean jacket look myself, at least for 15 minutes or so until I do start to sweat my ass off, at which point I'll need to shed this thing. We got a bunch of people in the audience here. We've got Barbie and Jim and Christina and Lori and Patricia and Sarah and another Sarah and Terry and Austin. And boy, it's packing in here. So thank you all for being here on the bridge. For those of you out there on social media watching this on LinkedIn or Twitter or YouTube or Facebook, you can jump on over to openrecon.com and register there. I'll flash a QR code for you to try and get registered here as well. But we'd love to have you join us on the little more intimate bridge for the full hour. We'll be here for about 30 minutes. And with that, today is actually the premiere of season 3 of Running Into the Fog, kind of a big milestone. And Derek, what episode is this and who have we got today?
Right on. So season 3, episode 60.
6-0. Nice.
You're not even that old.
I know.
Although Eric has a birthday coming up, y'all, and day after tomorrow. How old will you be?
I will be whatever Aurora is plus 25 because I started the company on my 25th birthday. So that number is 28. So for those of you who can do the math, 53. That's where 53. I'm at.
Yep.
But not till Friday.
Not till Friday. We won't force it upon you just yet. So today's episode is really fun for a lot of reasons. Obviously, we're here at episode 60. Eric and I have been doing this podcasting now for a while. I think we launched our initial podcast in March of 21, I believe, something like that. So we're coming up on two full calendar years of this. And we're just finding still a lot of joy in this, even though the last 5 weeks we've been on break to celebrate the holidays. We have a guest with us who's extra special today because she's helping us bring a passion project to not only ourselves, gifts to one another, but hopefully somebody out there will find it to be an interesting read. I think that will be the case. And Wanda Thibodeau, welcome to Running Into the Fog. We're really, really happy you're here.
Hi, everybody. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Wanda. Great to see your face today. I'm very excited to hear about your story, rather to help kind of project your story out to the world and get people familiar with who you are. We're going to talk about our little collaboration together here as well. But before we do that, I want everybody to take a look at the other spotlight on the screen. That's called a POAP. Which is short for Proof of Attendance Protocol. It's a Web3 token that will gain you access to things later. So scan that QR code, redeem your POAP, and if you don't know how to do that, we'll help you with that. Keep it in your wallet until further notice, and then this year, you're going to be using that to gain access to some things that you can't gain access to without it. So that's all I'm going to say about it until it's time to cut our first half listeners free on social. So scan away. And if you want to continue in the second half of the hour, that would be great, but you got to register to do it. So with that, Wanda is helping Derek and I ghostwrite a book this year. And we got started on it last year. And Wanda, before we tell everybody what the book is about, sort of the positioning of the book, I want to hear how you got into this position so that you can help people like us get these books out of us and into the real world, which I think is just such a tremendous, you know, blessing and, you know, generous service. And in particular with two weirdos like us, having to kind of walk the fine line of weirdness with us. How'd you get into this role, Wanda? What brought you here?
Well, basically, you know, I actually was a music major to begin with. And then, you know, when I got married and we moved out to Minnesota, we started our family and I just kind of needed something, you know, to bring in an income. I'd always loved writing. And so I just kind of started to depend on that and leaned on that, kind of built my portfolio and just basically through a lot of luck connected to the right people who eventually got me to the business side of things. And that's kind of where I found my niche. And I've been focusing on the business elements, you know, talking to CEOs and a lot of professionals since probably, I'd say around 2016, I've been doing this.
And you, some of the places that your writing shows up, obviously you're a ferocious LinkedIn writer, as I've come to learn,
yes.
But your writing shows up sort of in a business context and other arenas, other venues. Can you share a couple of those places where we might, or the audience might find Wanda's prints all over certain articles?
Sure. Well, a lot of what I do right now is ghostwriting. So, you know, there's confidentiality things there where I can't say exactly where those things are, but for my own work, you know, that you do can see my byline on it. I had an Inc. column for roughly 3 years. I've been in Entrepreneur, Newsweek. We just had a piece in Harvard Business Review that I did for a client. So I'm pretty much everywhere if you want to take a look.
That is remarkable. You know, the one thing I'll say before we go a little bit deeper into your background, Sarah Soriano, who's on the thread today, spoke to you actually on another Auroran's recommendation. Craig Fleischer was the first one that tipped us off to your gifts and talents, Wanda. And you know, from the standpoint of today's business world, it can be a little bit tricky to balance just how much you wear your Christianity on your sleeve and how much you sort of keep in the, you know, sort of the next second or third level of appearances, right? And what I appreciated most about you, and speaking candidly, a couple of guys who have been impacted, you know, at deeply personal levels. In fact, our dear old father, rest his soul, died 24 years ago today. And I crossed the chasm as a 48-year-old, much younger than my much older brother, you know, where I had 24 years with him, and now I've had 24 without.
Yeah.
And what was most attractive, I'll just say it, about your ability to help us bring this passion project of the book to life had a lot to do with the fact that you're unafraid to talk about things like Christianity and your faith and other things. In fact, you host your own podcast known as Faithful on the Clock. And I think that's just awesome, and especially in today's world. And I know that I'll repel a few people with that statement, and that's just going to be okay.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And what I can say to that is, you know, regardless of what faith you might happen to be, for me, like you said, you know, it is hard to balance those elements. You know, but there is this call right now to be, you know, who you really are and be authentic. And part of the reason I do the podcast is because I think it's so difficult to have those things be misaligned. It doesn't matter what you believe, but if you're trying to come into the business space and be somebody you're not, that is, it's almost impossible to do. And part of what I am trying to do in my work, it doesn't matter what client that I'm working with, is just bring their story to the front, whatever that might happen to be, so that they don't have to hide who they are. You know what I mean? That is my mission.
That is awesome.
Eric, so you know, in that vein, you certainly helped Derek and I figure out who we are, or at least how to tell that story. You know, we talked internally about the genre of the book last year before we brought you aboard. And I described the genre as self-help memoir period action thriller, which, of course, doesn't really sound like a genre you'd hear from a publishing house, but maybe tell us what's been the most maybe interesting and then the most frustrating part of working with the Johnson brothers on writing a book. And then let's talk about what the book's about.
Well, for me, the most interesting part has just been about how this whole project has just really challenged kind of the way that I think in a lot of ways and opened up the way that I see things, getting me to kind of, I use the term twist the pretzel sometimes, but just to kind of take that different viewpoint and to just realize that that's okay to do. So that's been very helpful to me to kind of work through that with you guys, to just kind of explore myself a little bit through the concepts that you guys are trying to bring to each other. I think the most frustrating thing is just like I'm kind of alluding to is that we all have our biases and we all have our own ways of thinking. And so for me to even just kind of accept the new way of thinking that you guys are presenting, it has twisted my pretzel and worried me a little bit, but in a good way, you know what I mean? That I'm kind of, I think I'm becoming more open to different ways of seeing things in a very helpful way.
That's really a great, you know, response. And I always witness that ball peen hammer on the wall behind you. And I think, boy, what's Wanda got? What's she trying to say with that ball peen hammer? Like she's going to hammer us into shape one way or the other, whether we like it or not, but you have that. And, you know, just from the point of view of whether or not this would actually happen is largely based on whether or not we have you. So just from me to you, at least, you know, thank you for the willingness to be vulnerable and to tolerate, you know, these two crazy guys, wild and crazy guys, to try and get this thing out into the world. So with that, I'm going to jump back to Derek and say, Derek, what's the name of the book and what's it about? Obviously it's a rhetorical question because I'm helping write the book. So, but what's the book about?
I've had countless people who know we're writing a book. You know, some of them are friends of mine. Others are friends of both of us. Some of them are complete strangers. And, you know, I'm a people person, like our dad. He could strike up a conversation with literally anybody. And I've got that blessing and curse. And I talk to people all the time. And some of them are total strangers. And they say, well, tell me about you. And I said, well, you know, one of the big things going on in my life right now is I'm blessed by the chance to bring a book out into the open with my big brother. And they say, well, what's the title of the book and what's it all about? And, you know, sometimes you get these blank stares and like, what the hell did you just tell me? But the book, as I like to describe it, I've been starting with the subtitle of the book that we have, at least the operating subtitle, because I think it paints it, the title in a slightly different light. And so if all of you as guests on Running Into the Fog today see yourself as a person of influence, and I would challenge you, if you don't see yourself like that, think about how you influence decisions in your household, you know, with aging parents, in the business setting, you know, if you're a coach. Everyone listening today is a person of influence in one way or another, okay? Secondly, you all have stakeholders. Somebody somewhere down the chain is a stakeholder of yours or a benefactor of yours that you have some element of influence over. They listen to you, they respect you. Maybe sometimes that's forced, like our kids, you know, they have to, right? But somewhere down the line, you're a person of influence to stakeholders. And in the business of competitive intelligence, we call it the ambiguous sciences for a reason. There's often no one right answer. There's Eric's truth, and there's Derek's truth, and then there's the actual truth that somewhere's, hopefully they're pretty well aligned, but there's really three versions of every side of a story. And at least that's the way I see it. So persons of influence leading their stakeholders through times of ambiguity or ambiguous circumstances, we're still kind of working that out. But I think if you buy into that, you might see the title be more illustrative in productive ways. And there's two mindsets then that you have to think about. And I shared with Wanda how I don't ever really know how I'm going to act on this podcast. And most of the time it's, hey, the Holy Spirit tells me to say a certain thing or I'd move a certain direction. And for this, I'm going to read you a quote that we, at least for the moment, are using as our opening quote of the preface of this book. And it reads, pure pragmatism can't imagine a bold future. Pure idealism can't get anything done. It is the delicate blend of both that drives innovation. Of course, that's Simon Sinek, right, Eric? And, you know, I think that it, in today's world, we have to think long-term, think about things like play to keep playing. That's, of course, Aurora's motto. And you also have to confront the realities of driving cash flow and making decisions that you have to make on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis. And so that quote really epitomizes it for me and is the reason why the book will be titled The Missionary and the Mercenary. And it's not, many of you that may know us might say, well, Derek, he's more mercenary and Eric's more missionary. That's not what it's about, y'all. It's about how you as an individual have to mode balance from both mindset and skill set to be both. I don't know if you probably could have done that in far less words, but what do you think about it?
Well, I'll just share that when this discovery happened a couple of years ago, and it wouldn't have happened without the pandemic, by the way, what I realized was all of a sudden I was being unintentionally more mercenary or missionary than the situation called for. And so it dawned on me, boy, what if it's both of those things, but in the right ratio? You know, less like a polarity, more of one means less of the other, in other words, and more like bass and treble, you know, that you're finding the right balance of both mindsets to enable the other stakeholders in the situation to enjoy the results that they're going to be most incentivized by as well. And I think that's really, you know, the bottom line. A stakeholder, by our definition, is someone who stands to win or lose as a result of your actions. So you as an actor out in the world have an influence on those around you as well as, you know, those directly in your care. But we are far too accidental in terms of how we balance the missionary and the mercenary inside us, the idealist and the pragmatist, in order to both generate bold vision and get things done, to accomplish it, to paraphrase Cynic. So Wanda, let's get you back on, you know, the mic here. What do you think about all this stuff? And then I got to take this jean jacket off or I'm going to really start sweating in front of the camera because the sun is beating on my back right now.
Sure. Well, you go ahead and do that. I mean, my thoughts on this, you know, as I've been working on the book, like I said, it has, you know, gotten me to think in really different ways, in a good way. And what I have taken from this is that you are, we talk about this a little bit in the text, that like you said, you know, we let chance kind of direct things a lot, but we don't have to. And if once you grasp onto that concept that you're in control of a lot more than you think, and you don't have to focus on the things you can't control, that just opens up your life a ton, because now you can get rid of most of the stuff that you don't have to worry about, and your life suddenly becomes far less stressful. And at the same time, you've got these very controllable points that you can focus on, that if you put your energy behind them, you can have some real success with. And I think that to me is the most driving thing behind the book for people to take away.
Right on, thank you. I don't know what that was, but did you hear that growling dragon or whatever it was under the surface there? So one last appeal for interlocutors. We've got Terry Thiel, who's going to be joining us in the second half. And I'm recruiting a few others here to come and talk with Wanda in the second half. We got about 11 minutes before we cut you off, social streamers. So go on over to openrecon.com, look for the little RITF link in the top and register on that form. And then if you're in the audience and you'd like to be an interlocutor with Wanda today, please just message me, let me know. So our chapters are really, you know, the analogy that we've been using is that it's like a pendulum swinging from one extreme to the other, where each of these mindsets is at a greater or lesser advantage. And, you know, that mental imagery allows us to set some cadence. There's 10 chapters, and it starts with the concept of undercertainty, that action is prevented by not knowing enough about what's going to happen as a result of your actions. And so we are paralyzed by uncertainty, this infinite void of possibilities that might be the consequence of our actions, and it makes us second guess ourselves. And that's actually not really what happens in the real world. It's the excuse that we allow ourselves to, you know, surrender to, which enables us to procrastinate longer than we should. Now, I am a very practiced strategic procrastinator. And what I mean by that is I wait until I'm close enough to the event horizon that I must now act on whatever it is I'm deliberating over, whether I have enough information or not about that, or knowledge, essentially. And so this concept of undercertainty is a much more defeatable threshold. There's not a billion variables that you're going to have to account for. There's three or four that, you know, might factor into the results of your actions that you want to be mindful of. And that three or four things is a heck of a lot more actionable than the billion things that you looked into the void and saw all the uncertainty around. So I'm going to throw that out there and just see if you guys have a reaction to that, Wanda or Derek. Obviously, the advantage in undercertainty is, was it mercenary has the advantage? I think mercenary has the advantage in undercertainty. Anyway.
Well, I mean, again, as we've been working on this, it has been so beneficial to me to, as you said, see that these things don't necessarily have to be in conflict, that there's kind of a time and place for everything. And I think any, as you said, any stakeholder who has influence over anybody, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, your family life professional, you know, you are going to have situations that require more of a mercenary side. You're going to have some times where it's going to be, need to be more missionary. And part of what I think the value of this book is learning how to kind of use your emotional intelligence and all of those other skills that we draw on to discern what one do I need right now? You know what I mean? And kind of pulling those into balance and saying you don't have to be in one box or the other. They can work in tandem.
Wanda, I'm going to change course a little bit. I'm sure about that feedback I seem to be getting, but I see you as a professional communication expert. You know, your role, at least in the project we're working on, is trying to get really ambiguous ideas and abstract ideas and sometimes complex ideas onto a page that will be interesting to read for people all walks of life, not even those folks that are strictly interested in competitive intelligence, and doing it in a way that communicates, you know, the storyline and the sequencing of those 10 chapters. Okay. How, when you look at a project like the one we recruited you for, and I'm sure you get proposals all the time, you know, I would imagine you're looking at transcripts and outlines on a regular basis, and you probably turn down some of them. When you look at those outlines and you seek some clarity on the type of impact or role you can have for a author or set of co-authors like our project happens to be, you know, what exactly do you look for? And then do you have any tips for the audience, kind of going back to that communication expert perspective? You know, I'm of the opinion, for instance, that email is far too overused and people should pick up the phone more, you know, that type of stuff. So do you have any tips, you know, after you describe kind of things you look for in particular project opportunities and what might turn it into something you might turn down or sidestep?
Sure. Well, and I think you guys have talked with me a little bit about this too, but looking for a project where, you know, it's not necessarily, I mean, because I want to get everybody's story out there, but the stories that really, you know, to me have the most interest and the most intrigue are the ones where you can look and say, that's going to be a book that you can be reading that, you know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now. So it's very evergreen. And I'm not saying that they're necessarily built on, you know, that you can't be talking about something that's relevant for today. You know what I mean? You know, we can talk about Carnegie the same way, you know, or now as we did, or we can talk about Carnegie now and have him be relevant, even though, you know, he's been dead for a long time, right? So there are those aspects of it, but I like these projects and I look for elements of what does this have for the long haul? You know, how is this going to impact people, not just, you know, in a trend way or because people are talking about it for 5 minutes right now, but what value does this have? What influence is this message going to have for the long term? So if I can find projects like that and help people to communicate their message in a way that it's phrased that way and to see how that can connect, I think that sells better, to be honest. As far as tips, I would say probably your first instinct for what you say is probably your best one. And all I mean by, because I'm not saying that you can't, you know, have a little bit of forethought about what you're saying and, you know, use the right context. But I do think that as you're going through it, you just have to think about, we tend to self-censure is what I'm getting at. And we tend to worry about how we're going to come across. Whereas if you just think about what is the main point you're trying to get across and solidify it down to that nugget, you know, or a couple of nuggets. So like, for example, if we're working on a book project like this, you know, you guys sent me an outline where you guys had a couple of chapters. You had distilled kind of some of these ideas where you knew kind of where you wanted to go. And then we kind of went from there to say, and we got the details around that. So don't worry so much about how you're going to come across. You can fine tune that later. Just get the idea out, whether it's with a voice recorder or whatever means you have. Just get the concept out so you don't forget it, and then you can refine it later. That to me is the biggest thing for anybody who wants to put something out there.
That's awesome. So Wanda, before we cut our social streamers loose, I want to give you a little bit of a plug here. For those of you who, like Derek and I, we're struggling to figure out how to get a book out of yourself. And there are several people actually in our audience today who've written books. And a couple of the folks who are joining in the second half have written a lot of books. Well, one of them anyway, the first one. I'm interested to see what Craig Fleischer has to talk with you about, as he's our first interlocutor. Terry Thiel is going to be number two, and we've got room for one more. So if there are any volunteers in our audience who want to join the second half, please do. So Wanda, this is your website. Taking Dictation is the name of your business. You've got your contact info on there. Obviously, you know, you do all sorts of services related to getting this type of project done, including also ghostwriting, business articles and stuff like that. And, correct. You know, you want to get something published in the Harvard Business Review or Business Week or that sort of thing, Wanda's there for you. So for those of you who are looking at this on social media, either during the live stream or the archive, please go out and check out Wanda's website and get in touch with her. Before we cut you loose, though, I want to linger for a second on chapter two, because the advantage is with the missionary with chapter two. Chapter one, Under Certainty, is all about action and defeating the three or four things that, you know, are preventing you from taking action, paralyzing you. The second chapter is about stochasm. Now, Wanda, I'm guessing you have not heard that term until you met us, but the stochasm is the difference between what you think you know and what you actually know. It consists of two types of knowledge. One is the knowledge that you lack, and the other type is the false knowledge that you are far too overconfident in. Now, I know that both of our interlocutors in the second half will have a lot to say about stochasm, but let me give you 30 seconds or so to just react to that. How did this strike you as we oscillated the pendulum from under certainty, advantage, mercenary, to stochasm, advantage, missionary, when we sort of talked about it a few weeks ago?
Well, to be honest, my first impression was that that is something that everybody's going to struggle with. And if we can get people to just admit what they don't know, have a little bit of humility, you can overcome so many things just because of that. Because if you don't know what you don't know, you can't tackle it, right? Like you don't know what needs to be fixed. You don't know what needs to be improved. And that's kind of the idea with the competitive intelligence. You know, if you're trying to compete, you have to realize, you know, what your weak points are and your strengths so that you can put those to work. And so just realizing with that little bit of humility, here's where I'm really good. Here's where I'm kind of not so great. And here's things I haven't even considered. And I don't even know that I've considered them. But I'm going to be open to at least hearing somebody else out so that I can learn and grow from that.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Wanda. And, you know, if you haven't converted yet and joined the actual webinar bridge, don't feel bad. But it is time to say goodbye to you. So openrecon.com is your last chance. Go figure it out. Join us back on the bridge for Unspeakable. This first half was called Unthinkable, by the way. Hopefully we helped you to think some unthinkable thoughts. Come back and hear some unspeakable speakings, I guess, in the second half. But we're going to say goodbye to our folks on social. The show goes on for another 30 minutes. We've got Craig Fleischer joining us. And with that, goodbye, social streamers. See you in 2 weeks.